Vectis Radio. Vectis Radio. FM 104.6, bringing the island's community together.
This show is sponsored by Narconon UK.
Call Narconon today at 01435 512 460. 01435 512 460.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of Wood and Wisdom with me, Joan Ellis, and my very special guest, Member of Parliament for the Isle of Wight, Bob Seeley. Welcome, Bob.
Hello.
You're descended from a family involved in politics, business and soldiering, the sixth member of your paternal family to become an MP. The name Seeley has always been associated with philanthropic work, setting up a library service, building houses for the rural poor and setting up a lifeboat service. Does the weight of responsibility of the Seeley name sit heavily on your shoulders?
It's very kind of you to be so nice about them. They were, they weren't all conservative, is the first thing I'd say. They were generally liberal radicals, and I'm the first one to be deliberately elected a conservative. A great uncle was elected a conservative, but he was at the Boer War at the time, and I think he was probably thought he was going to be elected as a liberal. No, to be honest, we all love the island, and we've all had a passion for it. So whether we've been MPs or we've just lived on the island, or we're just trying to serve it in some way in public life. We've all had a passion for it. And to be honest, I certainly hoped that I wouldn't have got this job or this role based on a family name. I'd hope I get it because I'm the best person for the job, and I need to be the best person for the job.
Yeah. So why the break from the family tradition of Liberal MPs?
Probably because the Liberal Party died in the 1940s, and arguably the Liberal tradition in politics is in large part, not entirely, but in large part represented by the Conservative Party, which is now arguably a little bit more liberal than it was, and it combines a traditional conservatism with a liberal belief in free markets, freedom of thought, freedom of speech, and all those important freedoms that we love.
So going back to 2008, you served in the UK Armed Forces when you undertook a tour of Iraq and was subsequently awarded a military MBE in 2016. During that time in Iraq, you must have witnessed things that people like me on Civvy Street can't even imagine. How did those experiences shape you, Bob?
I have to say, I found my tour very fulfilling. I wouldn't say it was... military tours can be quite unpleasant, but they can also be quite fulfilling in different ways. And if you believe in what you're doing, and I certainly tried to believe in what I was doing there. I had my doubts about the Iraq War, but I was determined to serve to the best of my abilities. I've actually done two lots of Iraq tours, because I did one quite recently on the ISIS campaign, and then I fought on the original campaign, or the original counterinsurgency campaign. And then also I was in Afghanistan a few times as well, and one or two other places, Libya a little bit as well. It was quite trying and quite tough at times, but I have to say I found it very rewarding, and I was very proud to serve. I was very proud to serve my country, actually, and I have to say I think it was probably the best thing that before coming a Member of Parliament, I think it was probably the best thing that I did. So I felt very privileged to serve, and I would thoroughly recommend it to young people nowadays.
Do you think some sort of national service should be evoked?
National service is difficult, because saying to people you haven't got freedom to live your life as you would want for 2 years is probably not a very popular idea nowadays. However, encouraging people to be engaged in their communities, encouraging people to travel, encouraging young people to see the world and to understand different cultures and languages, that is important, and especially on the island, just to get off it for a little bit. One of the big problems that we have in the Isle of Wight is if you want a higher education or if you're ambitious, you pretty much have to leave the island, and I think that's very sad. And I would like that not to be the case in the future. So one of the things I'm very keen to do working with the council is to get a university campus on the island and to dramatically increase the higher education offer. Not necessarily in Isle of Wight University, that might not work so well, but franchising university courses from other people, be it Chichester or Portsmouth or Southampton or University of Coventry, which is expanding, and give people greater options and greater flexibility so you can grow and get a better chance of having higher education on the island. You can sort of at the moment, but not enough.
How realistic do you think that is for perhaps the next generation coming through, or within the next 5 years? How feasible is
that? Within the next 10 years, I would be disappointed if it hadn't happened. In the next 5 years, I don't know. I mean, Newport Harbour is the key here. There is a regeneration plan for Newport Harbour, and I would love the council to commit, in theory, to a campus somewhere on the island, and I would love it to commit to a significant uplift in higher education. Because at the moment we are well behind the national average in the amount of people on the island with higher education, and that is not good for us.
No, not at all. I mean, this is something very close to my heart, so it's something I would love to see.
Yeah.
But where would be funding? Because obviously that would be quite an undertaking.
Well, I'm not an economist and I'm not an accountant, but I mean the principle is that we're looking now at Newport Harbour. And if we could build homes in Newport Harbour, you know, the fact is whether we like it or not, we have to build some homes in order to pay for this stuff. So we need a combination in Newport Harbour of homes, you know, preferably an arts, cultural quarter, preferably university campus. And if we can get the railway from, you know, Ryde to Newport, that would be wonderful as well. So it's potentially a really big idea. Now, I want us... I don't have much power here, but I have a lot of influence. So there's a lot of this comes from the council, the regen team, and the councillors have to decide. What I want us to do is to be as ambitious as possible in what we're trying to achieve.
What about money funding from private enterprise? Is that a feasible?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, if you want anything that will work, we should do anything that will work.
Why do you think it's taken so long for that impetus to come about?
I don't know, but I think, unfortunately, I think we've had a lack of vision that goes about 50 years. We thought just bungalow building and cheap tourism was somehow going to make us rich and increasing our population, and it hasn't, because all we've done is export our young people. We need a jobs agenda, not a housing agenda. We need to attract high tech here. And if 20 years ago we tried to get a university here, then the island might be different to what it is now. If you look at Bournemouth and Brighton and Southampton and Portsmouth, all these places have been energised by higher education. And it's been a massive economic driver as well as a social good and an educational good in its own right.
Yeah, I mean, only good can come of it, surely.
Yeah. I mean, you could say there are too many people with media studies degrees and what have you, or arts degrees. I think arts degrees are wonderful, personally. A bit dubious about media studies per se, but... higher education is a moral good. Education is a moral good. Ignorance is a moral evil. Now, you know, we need the higher levels of education, the greater our quality of life, the more we get out of life, and the more that we are equipped in the modern world to function well in the new economy.
Yeah, and a lot of students from Isle of Wight schools are motivated sufficiently to travel and relocate on the mainland in order to get access to higher education.
Absolutely, and a lot of them will still continue to go. You know, but for a lot of them will, you know, especially for the Oxfords and the Cambridges, they will go. But if we've got courses here, be it engineering to feed Vestas or BAE,
yes.
If we've got maths because we've got sort of, you know, we're getting a cluster of cyber companies or, you know, online firms here. All that stuff is really important and good for our future.
And arts degrees. I mean, you've just secured priority treatment for
we have,
Ireland.
Which is really happy about, so that's great. But, I mean, we've already got Platform One, which is a fantastically good music school. They have students. They want to expand. We need a campus for them. UK Sailing Academy. You know, they may need campus space as well. You know, we've got our graduate apprenticeship schemes in Newport. They need a campus as well. So it's not just for a traditional university where people are doing history degrees, but it's for people doing sailing, it's for people doing arts, it's for people doing hospitality apprenticeship courses. It may be then for people doing engineering degrees as well. So it's for a whole host of things that we need that cluster, that student cluster that can help have a focal point for higher education and help rejuvenate Newport as well.
And then keep that talent within on the island.
Yeah.
So it plugs in directly to our strengths.
Yeah, but if you've got jobs in teaching, you know, you might, let's say you go to Oxford, you know, you might come back when you're 25 rather than when you're 45.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily stopping some of our youngsters going to the mainland, because that's great. Mm. People need to travel and they need to see the outside world. But it's also giving them the option that you can come back earlier.
Because it's a place people return to generally to have families, isn't it?
Yeah, but you know, people. I want people to be able to return to the island when they're 25 and not when they're 55.
Yeah.
You know, and I want people to be able to think that they have a chance of setting up their own company and doing really well in the global marketplace, working out of Chale or Knighton or Bryston or Freshwater or Cowes, rather than thinking that they've got to go to London or Brighton.
Yes.
So it's about aspiration. one of the things that really grips me and that concerns me is that for the last 50 years we've almost forgotten what an extraordinary and unique place the island has been. Not only in our unbelievably powerful artistic inheritance, the Tennysons and the Turner sketchbooks and paintings of the island, and all these wonderful poets and painters and artists who've made their homes here or visited here for
Dickens,
inspiration.
Dickens, Keats, the list is endless, isn't it?
Absolutely. Endymion, A Thing of Beauty is a Joy Forever. Now, he wrote that either looking at Shanklin in Chine or Buchan Valley, where people are, you know, debating which. Absolutely. And we had fantastic sciences. The hovercraft was built here. We built these massive and beautiful blades for wind turbines. Marconi had the first telegraph station on the Isle of Wight down at St Catherine's Point, St Catherine's Lighthouse. So we've had this. The rock ballistic missile rockets were tested in the 1960s,
yes,
off the Needles Battery. We've got this extraordinary heritage, and it's almost like we have willfully forgotten about it.
And somehow allowed part of our heritage to become a bit of a joke, and the island as such, which is a great shame.
Yeah, and it's, you know, and it's great to have dinosaurs, but let's have hovercraft and dinosaurs and missiles and online.
And we don't
art.
Want to be seen as dinosaurs.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So we need to reinvent ourselves, not just by having some fake identity, but actually remembering what an extraordinary identity we have.
And going back to your own family heritage,
yeah.
Those of us who have been lucky enough to glimpse the portrait of General Jack Seeley and his horse Warrior,
yeah,
that hangs in Motherton Manor will know exactly what I mean when I say that the pair exude integrity. That portrait actually brought me to tears, and I'm not a horsey person, but something about it just really moved me. And he was an MP, Jack Seeley was an MP twice in the early 1900s,
yep,
and led one of the last great cavalry charges on Warrior in 1918. And I believe that's what Michael Mapogo's war horse is actually based on.
I don't know if it's based on him. Warrior was certainly the most... I mean, Jack was my great-great-uncle.
Yes.
He was my great-granddad's younger, naughty brother. But I think... I don't know if war horse is based on Warrior, but I know that Warrior was the most famous war horse, in fact, by a long way. I don't think there were many other war horses that were in the public imagination. But Warrior captured the public imagination simply because he and Jack survived. They were the only people who started. I think he was the only general who actually stayed on the front line for 4 years until he had mustard gas poisoning, and he was sort of invalided out in 1918. But even then, Warrior stayed for the entire war.
Yeah, it's that phrase, isn't it? Works like a war horse. He just, yeah, kept going, didn't he?
He did, and he was known as the horse the Germans couldn't kill, yeah, just awfully, because of the terrible numbers of horses, as well as clearly as men and, you know, others who died. So Warrior was a great animal.
So... obviously, like I say, you've got this wonderful heritage within your family. During your time as MP... Yeah.
Can I just say, my great-great... people remember Jack, but actually, the person I remember is my great-great-great-granddad, who was called Charles, who did a lot of good on the island, and who was a radical liberal Chartist supporter. So he was a big fan of the universal vote when it was not popular. And Queen Victoria refused to speak to him for 25 years because of his political opinions. And if there's somebody I'm very proud of, actually, it's him, who made himself unpopular but stood by his beliefs.
So is Charles somebody you'd like to sort of emulate?
Yeah, in a way. I think he was a man... I don't think I have his self-confidence. I'm a little bit more modest. That I think he was very self-confident, but he was also a man of very strong opinions. And he was... you know, very strong liberal, radical opinions, which were seen by some at the time as being dangerous, but we now accept as being right. And I think what he teaches me is that it is important to be right, regardless of what is happening around you.
To do the right thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, during your time as MP for the Isle of Wight, what would you most like to be remembered for, Bob Seeley?
Doing the right thing.
Doing the right thing. Okay. And I've spoken to a number of people about you,
yeah,
and you're almost a year in office,
yeah,
And I think you still remain something of an enigma amongst your constituents. I don't know. How would you describe yourself? They said, don't know him as a person. How would you describe yourself?
I try not to be an enigma, because I try to be very active and very vocal. So I do quite a lot of media stuff, just because I want to explain to people all the stuff that I'm doing. And in the next month or so, I'm going to be publishing a 10,000-word manifesto of what I think the island needs over the next 10 or 20 years, what we need collectively to do. So I try not to be an enigma, and I'm certainly trying to be out there as much as possible. For me, I don't know how to describe me, and it's probably not for me to describe myself. I hope I'm a hard-working Member of Parliament. More than anything, I'm someone who adores his constituency. If I was an MP for anywhere else, I'd say it's nice being an MP, but it's not the Isle of Wight. So for me, representing the Isle of Wight, it is like being married to the right woman. Now, whether the island thinks that or not is another matter, but for me, I adore my constituents.
So what is it we've spoken about a number of things, but what is it for you that personally that's so special about the island?
I've just always loved it ever since I was a kid.
And what part?
All of it. I mean, when I was young, we used to stay in Ventnor, down at the Peacock Vein. We used to go there twice a year. And I remember that ever since I was knee-high to a grasshopper, I remember being on Brook Beach and staring out to sea and thinking of all the adventures I was going to have in my life.
And have you had most of those adventures, or are there plenty?
I haven't had every single one, but I probably had enough to say, actually, I haven't done too badly so far.
And when that young Bob was standing on the beach at Ventnor, thinking of the life that lay ahead of him, are the things you've done to date, you know, your career,
some of them.
Are they what you imagined for yourself?
Some of them. You know, seeing the world, being a soldier, writing, some of them. Yeah.
So, like I say, you've been MP for the best part of the year, and is the job how you envisaged it was going to be?
Difficult to say, yes and no. In many ways it's better, but it's how you imagine things and what things are never always the same, I don't think. And I found it really quite difficult to adjust at first, because I was going from quite a private job in the military to an incredibly public job. And I think it was a difficult transition where people listened to, hopefully my colleagues listened to what I was saying in the army, but it wasn't public. And then so people judge you on your public utterance as clearly as their parliamentary representative in a way that, you know, puts pressure on you. And I think it took me a few months to adjust. But I'm really loving the job now, or the role. Actually, it's not a job, it's a vocation for me. I'm really loving my vocation, and I'm working out how to use the power and influence that I have for the greatest benefit, both the island and my nation. So it's working out what you want to achieve, what you want to be known for, and how you use the influence that you have. And that's what I'm sort of doing at the moment. And we're making good progress. I'm not there yet. But I'm a lot more comfortable speaking in the House of Commons than I was. I'm a lot less nervous about it. I feel I'm getting to be at home there.
Who intimidates you there?
Nobody intimidates me, but the place itself, it feels just a little bit... It's just an odd feel about it. And I was actually sitting there last week and thinking that I just was growing familiar with it and more comfortable with it, and I was less intimidated by it, and I was more confident about getting up and articulating my thoughts, because I think... And maybe you're just more confident about your worth or the value that you can bring, or that you know what you're saying is right for your constituents and your island. So I am sort of more confident in speaking out.
What comes first, your constituents or your party?
You should not even be asking me that question. The idea that I would put my party before anything is just abhorrent. And really, you shouldn't even be asking that. I'm almost object to that question on principle. Do you really think that I would put a party loyalty before my constituents?
I would just pose
the question. How on earth could you even ask that?
Having spoken to you, I already knew the answer before I asked the question.
I mean, I thought you were going to say constituency and country, because you could say, then you have a choice that, you know, your national duty should always come first. But I mean, party.
And not every politician would answer in that
to
way.
To be honest, they'd all say that. How many of them mean it?
I
was going to rebel last week on the, making sure the overseas territories had higher financial standards because of all this dirty money and all this corruption. The whip said to me, are you going to rebel? I said, of course I'm going to rebel. How can you even think I wouldn't?
Exactly. So it's not that daft a question.
I almost think, how could anyone
think that of you, and I agree. You come across as a very, you know, we were just discussing earlier what kind of person you were, and you come across as a very passionate person. And you actually do come across as a man of integrity.
Well, it's very kind. I hope so. I try to.
And you, when we listen to sort of Parliament question time, there's a lot of jeering. It can stand like a school playground to you know, the uninitiated ear.
It can.
And how do you cope with that approach, and how do you cope with the brickbats and the jeering and the put downs that obviously is part and parcel of your job?
Well, it is actually, although outside Prime Minister's question time, it's a much more collegiate place than people think. I mean, the stuff that I'm speaking on, foreign affairs, a little bit of Syria, a little bit of Russia, and clearly the Isle of Wight. You know, we've got a debate next week, which I've helped to organise, on the economies of Ireland. We had a debate in January on the funding of the Isle of Wight local government. You know, these are issues where I'm making a case to government for more money or more understanding, but it's not like I've got people in the Labour Party shouting at me. And actually, for the stuff on foreign affairs, my closest allies are people I admire and respect hugely in the Labour Party, like Ben Bradshaw, like Chris Bryan, who I see eye to eye with on a lot of foreign policy issues. And so I think they're great. And in many ways, actually, there's some things I get on better with Labour colleagues, because this is not partisan. So for the overseas territory stuff, a lot of Labour Party people lined up, but also enough Tories lined up to carry us over the line. So the government had to concede. The government stood up. We were going to put down an amendment saying we're going to vote against the government. The government's going to lose this. We are forcing through an amendment that will bring the overseas territories in line to higher financial standards. And the government caved in. And so a group of us in the Conservatives aligned with the Labour Party.
And like you say, you're not afraid to rebel.
No, I don't have a problem with that at all. If it's in the national interest or my constituency interest, absolutely. Absolutely. Of course I'm going to.
Yeah, and if you didn't, if the Conservatives ceased to exist... Yeah. Who would you, of the existing parties, who would you go with?
Well, if the Conservatives exist, there wouldn't really be a Conservative or Liberal Party.
No, but because you seem to have leanings, like you say.
No, I'm not a lefty. I'm Conservative, believe in free markets. I loathe Jeremy Corbyn and the hard left of the Labour Party. I think they're a disgrace to democracy. Really appalling. But you know, right-wing Labour, yeah, they're good people. But you know, I'm a liberal conservative. Always will be a conservative liberal, either way.
We spoke earlier about
liberal conservative. Yeah. I'm never ever going to be a member of the Liberal Party. To make that absolutely clear. I mean, I'm not somebody who flits around between parties.
No, it was just a hypothetical question because you know.
Yeah, I think it's so hypothetical. You could say what happens if there's no Labour Party and if there was a proper Liberal Party in future, but even that's very far fetched.
Where we've spoken earlier that you have secured this priority treatment and the Arts Council of England for the island, what within this first year in the role of MP has been your sort of proudest achievement?
We've achieved a few things. I'm very ambitious, so I always want to achieve more, but we had the Arts Council priority funding, which should give us some more money, which is good. We saved Sandown School from closure, which is probably the single most important thing that we've done. And again, you know, was that me by myself? No, absolutely not. It was the families and the teaching staff and the pupils at Sandown. It was all the people who replied to the questionnaire, which really impressed the Department of Education. It was the Paul Brading, who did a great job. It was Councillor Dave Stewart. It was Brian Pope as well, our Isle of Wight education official. So it was a combination of people, but I was able to give voice to their concerns and to fight their corner as hard as possible. So saving Sandown School with others, and then getting, unfortunately, the academy out, because I felt the academy was failing, and so we made sure that the academy was replaced. So those were probably the most important things. There have been some other things as well, so we're working on some larger projects, and we're making slow headway, but a lot of this stuff will take years. So, you know, getting improvements to the island line, working with South West and Rail, getting them to be as ambitious as possible, you know, getting the investment into the railway system, getting the investment, extra investment into schools. You know, all these things aren't going to happen overnight, but there are a few specific things that we were able to do, which has been a good start, but we need to build on them.
And what about getting the next generation into politics?
I'd love to. And the problem is that people get turned off by politics because they think it's about middle-aged blokes shouting at each other, one from the Labour side and one from the Tory side. And really, for me, politics isn't about that. Politics is about ideas, it's about life, it's about how societies function. And I was always interested in politics from a very young age. I remember watching the Beeb, Question Time on the Beeb, when I was, I think, a teenager, and being fascinated by it. I'm just thinking that socialism was just inherently wrong. And then I went and lived in the Soviet Union for a few years, and you see the impact that the, for example, the absence of private property has on society when you have absolute rulers who can dictate and kill people without, you know, without legal comeback. And you see the role of ideas and how good societies are created and what goes wrong in societies, whether it's the Soviet Union or Nazi Germany. And so I'm interested not in Yabu's sort of politics, which frankly I find incredibly pointless and trivial and entirely lacking in ideas, but I'm interested in you know, how we produce good ideas for our society, how we make changes that make our society just better, how we live better lives. I want to live a really fulfilled life.
Yes.
And I want everyone else to do so as well. So what do we need to do to make that happen? We need better transport, we need to look up, we need housing, for affordable housing, but we don't want to have too much housing on the island because then it's just ruined and we're just importing people and not looking after our young. We need education. You know, we need our quality of life. We need public good.
Yes, I mean, but the lower echelons of society are...
What do you mean by that?
I mean, a lot of people...
I couldn't get away with saying that. Lower echelons.
I mean the people who are, if you want to call them working class, if you want to work, or they have a lot less money, they're on benefits.
You're talking about people who are less well off?
Yes, okay. Those people, through no fault of their own, through no fault of their own, how, what do you see that the hope for them going forward?
Many people in society are aspirational, and I've seen plenty of rich people who absolutely lack aspiration and are a little
bit spoiled. And squander what they've got.
Yeah, and I see an awful lot of people who don't have a lot of wealth who are absolutely aspirational, and if they're not aspirational for themselves, you can guarantee they're aspirational for their kids because they want their kids to have the education that they didn't have. So I don't distinguish between one group as opposed to the other group, certainly not on economic background. What we have to do is make sure our school system is as good as possible. What we have to do is make sure our islanders get educated. What we have to do is make sure islanders, we remind ourselves what a fabulous, wonderful, unique place the Isle of Wight is. I would not want to be the Member of Parliament for anywhere else. You could offer me the poshest seat in England and I wouldn't care. This is the most special place on earth for me and I adore it.
We're very mixed, aren't we? We're very lucky. We've got, you know, there's pockets of great wealth here, but there's also places...
Yeah, we're poor. We're poor compared to the southeast of England. So let's work out how we can get rich, and not just in money, but in terms of life experience, in terms... That's why art's important, because you can use it for education. You can use it for regeneration, because art's jobs survive the recession better, because if we have a cultural economy here, we'll attract more visitors, you know? Yeah. And so... This is about, when I talk about wealth creation, for me, it's really not just about money, but it's about everything.
Yes, and you talk about being aspirational, but I suppose, I think some people, unfortunately, you know, be it through ill health or lack of money, they feel so downtrodden that it feels a downward spiral from which they cannot get themselves out.
Well, they can do, but then you try to give them a hand, you try to help them.
Yeah.
That's what we're trying to do.
So you're talking about sort of more social housing?
Housing is different from how do you get people out of a cycle of poverty. Mm. Those are two different issues. So do you want to talk about housing or do you want to talk about
social? I think depending on perhaps we don't have enough time to go into this because it is a very big question.
Let's talk about housing.
And I think where and how people live is very influential in how they live their lives.
And one of the problems at the moment is that the Isle of Wight is seen as a southeast economy. And so developers come here and they build... They want greenfield sites because they can flog houses better. So they buy up greenfield sites, which messes up our tourism economy because there's fewer greenfields and we live in a more crowded environment. And they build four-bedroom houses that either islanders can't afford, but certainly young islanders can't afford. So we have had the wrong type of housing built on the island for a long time. So what we need to do is build the right type of housing. And that for sure, that means getting money to get... I was talking about it with the councillors, the council leader and the chief executive today. We need to get access to funding that allows small and medium-sized builders on the Isle of Wight, not just the big players on the mainland, to build small-scale housing estates, but of the type of housing that we need, so 1 and 2 bedroom properties for youngsters and for affordable homes for islanders. So that's what we need to do. And one of the reasons why we have a dreadful housing situation on the island is because we haven't challenged the nature of the housing that gets built. So we need better quality housing, and it's the right sort of 1 and 2 bedroom housing, starter housing, key shared equity housing to give youngsters hope. One of the most upsetting things in the last election for me was listening to youngsters, and yeah, I say youngsters, I mean people in their 20s, who hadn't got a hope in hell of actually finding somewhere to live on the island. And that for me was heartbreaking.
Yeah, certainly not get on the property ladder.
Exactly. So we need to do something about it. So housing for me, land use is a massive issue. I don't want greenfield development. I want us to make maximum use of brownfield. You know, let's buy up bungalows and we stick a second floor in them, so you have 2 properties instead of 1. Let's increase a little bit our density, get better quality, because you get more services if you get sort of, you know, denser environments. We can't do low density on the island because we don't have the space. So let's do really high quality housing, but not on greenfields, and let's keep as many of our greenfields for our tourism economy, for our wonderful quality of life as well, which is important.
So one final question, because I know time is tight for you, Bob Seely. What next in the immediate future? What's your next challenge?
We've got a debate on Wednesday on which on the economics of Ireland, so I'm going to speak on that clearly. It's very important. That was organised by the all-party parliamentary group that I lead. And I think at some point in the next month, certainly the next 2 months, I'll be launching my manifesto, and that's a big document of what we need to do for the next 20 years.
Oh, thank you very much, Bob Seely. Thank you for your
time.
Thank you.
Vectors Radio. 104.6. The heart of the island's community.
Olive White Studio Glass at Arrowton Barnes, Craft Village, is one of the leading British glassmaking studios and has a reputation worldwide. The studio is open 7 days a week, and you can come and watch master glassmaker Timothy Harris create his amazing designs. A visit to Isle of Wight Studio Glass also offers an opportunity to purchase a piece of glass that you will treasure for always. You can also buy online at isleofwightstudioglass.co.uk or call us on 522-339.
Island Valentin is the Isle of Wight's most recommended mobile service. Check out their reviews on Yale.com. Car valets from just £30. Call Keith or Darren on 0776 408 339, or check online for Island Valentin at Yale.com, Facebook, Twitter and Instagram for photographs and customer reviews. Island Valentin, a perfect job every time.
This is Vectis Radio, the Isle of Wight's local community station. Vectis Radio was set up on the 23rd of January 2010 and has been running successfully ever since. We are a community radio station which promotes local businesses, events, charities and more, whilst also giving opportunities for people of all ages to broadcast live radio. For more information, call 01983 527 733.
It was a well-paying job, respectable, wearing a suit and tie every day. But I drank 24/7. Drank on the way to work, drank at work.
I never could come to terms with admitting that I had an alcohol problem or a pill problem.
I decided to get clean, and so I went to the Narconon program.
Not only did I handle my drug addiction, I completely knew how to live life.
Call Narconon today at 01435 512 460. 01435 512 460.
Your support matters. We operate thanks to the support of local businesses. If you would like to advertise on Vectis Radio, FM 104.6, contact our team today. Marketing at vectisradio.fm.
This show is sponsored by Narconon UK.
Call Narconon today at 01435 512 460. 01435 512 460.
Hello and welcome back to part 2 of Wit, Wisdom and Pratfalls with me, Joan Ellis, and my second very special guest of the day, Vari McCauley, co-director of Ventnor Exchange. Welcome, Vari.
Hi, Joan. Thanks for being back.
Yes, you're regular on this programme. Now, before the break, I was talking to our Isle of Wight MP, Bob Seely, and we were discussing how he'd lobbied successfully
for the Isle of Wight to be awarded priority status with the Arts Council. What does that mean for the Ventnor Exchange?
We were really thrilled that that was released recently. There was a press release that came out about that. We actually knew about it for a little while. But it's really good for all the arts organisations on the island, not just Ventnor Exchange. So we're all working very collaboratively these days. It basically means that we're seen more as part of the national picture, and it means that there's more chance of people getting funding when they apply to the Arts Council. It doesn't mean there's any guarantees for anything, but it's just kind of, it's promoting the Isle of Wight a bit more and being this cultural hub, and Bob's really helped to lobby for that, and he's promoting it as that, so it's great.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Do you think that will mean more applications to this year's Ventnor Fringe?
I've had a lot. Over the last couple of days, we close applications in a week, and I'm nearly full.
So once you reach a melting point, you say yes to everything until you're full. Is that how it works?
I've never had to say no, but I feel like there may come a point where it's full this year, which is for the first time.
That's very exciting,
which is great.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
How many years have you been doing it?
It'll be our ninth year this year for the Ventnor Fringe.
Wow. And it's the 7th and to the 12th of August
That's
this year?
Right. Yeah.
Wonderful. So have you got more venues?
We've consolidated a few. Some have really been there for a few years now and are getting more developed. And there will be a new theatre space because we desperately needed somewhere that was more around 100 people capacity, because all the spaces are kind of in churches and little halls, which is great, but we want more artists to come here instead of Edinburgh, and they need to make it more viable. They need more seats, basically.
Right, so where's that, which is a new venue?
So hopefully it'll be in the Ventnor Winter Gardens within the hall.
Oh,
so we'll be building a smaller venue within that hall.
Yes.
Because the hall is actually too big, it's for about 500 people. So we're just in talks with them to
yes,
to
it's a big
something.
Space. I can yeah. remember going to some a roulette night and dancing. And
yep.
they used to have
it's great
flea
dancing.
Market there, didn't
yep.
they, on a Saturday morning many yep. moons ago. No, it's a fabulous space.
It's a lovely hall. It's all, you know, old Art Deco, and it's great. It's just we need to make it a purpose-built theatre with all the lighting and for the needs of the performers.
So when performers come, like you say, you want more performers to come here rather than Edinburgh, do they get technicians and lighting? Is all that provided? How does that work?
Yeah, it's developed over the years, and now we've got to a pretty solid state where all venue hires will include technicians, support, and with everything that they need, so that it's easy for people to come down, because having that stretch of water is just a little bit extra effort and a bit more financially difficult.
Yes, yeah. I remember, I think it was last year, you were talking about possibly something to do with the hovercraft coming round from Southsea.
Oh, I'd love
coming
that.
Coming to Ventnor. Is that going to happen?
That's a dream. I'd love that
yeah,
to happen.
Wouldn't that be exciting?
We've spoken to Hovercraft before, and they Hover Travel, they'd love to do that, but there are a lot of safety things involved.
Oh,
and
they
have landed in Sandown before. I know they've done that. But yeah, I'd love that one day.
That'd be brilliant. I mean, it's wonderful, because I know people, you know, the Independent has called it, what is it, one hell of a homegrown festival, an authentic bohemian festival experience. And the Sunday Times said, rapidly becoming the country's most surprising and inspirational multidisciplinary arts festival. And they're quite some accolades, aren't they?
Yeah, we feel really lucky to have those quotes, and some of them we don't know where they've come from. That Sunday Times one, I still don't know who wrote it.
So just somebody anonymously has turned up, seen
yeah, and
some of the work.
Just, you know, was writing for the Sunday Times. But with the Independent, we had a really big piece in it a couple of years ago, and we hope to get more. I mean, we have just recently been in the eye with the Children's Festival that we just ran. And I think it was in the Express as well. So yeah, we're really happy whenever there's any national coverage.
Oh, of course. So the Children's Festival, that was the first one ever.
Yes.
It's just gone this April.
Yeah.
And what sort of things happen there?
So we, because we're in Ventnor normally, we really wanted to branch out and run more events throughout the year in other spaces. And we work quite closely with Key Arts these days. So we do a lot of things with them. which is great. And they were the perfect space for the Children's Festival because it's all self-contained. It's very safe for everyone. There's a really great theatre space. There's great rooms for activities. The kids took over the whole cafe. And, yeah, it was really successful for our first one. It's a little idea we've had in our heads for, like, probably about 5 years. And seeing it actually happen, it was about 700 people that came over the 3 days.
Brilliant.
So we're definitely doing it again.
So were the children performing as well as being in the audience?
They weren't this year, but I hope to have some more involvement next time. It was mostly there were theatre shows for the children to watch. So we had an amazing puppet show called Jana and the Yeti. And it's based on a sort of Norwegian tale of a girl that meets a yeti in the woods, and it's quite dark, but it was just, you know, the children just loved it. And we had an amazing Moomin's show, which was endorsed by Tove Jansson, so we were really happy to have that attached to it. And everyone loves the Moomins, so.
Yes. And I know there's sort of ever-increasing numbers of arts festivals and literary festivals across the country. What about children's festivals? Are they still quite unique, or are there plenty out there?
I'd say not enough, really. I think that it's really important to get young people into that, into the arts really early, just to kind of give them the experience so that they can decide for themselves if that's something that they're interested in. And they are the best audience because they will tell you when they like something.
Oh, that's true.
And they'll react really well to it. And they'll tell you also when they don't like something. So, yeah, whereas an adult audience sometimes very, you know, aloof, but, you know, oh, yeah, that was all right. And whereas if you're creating a whole thing just for young people, it's really dynamic and there's a lot of enthusiasm.
It's amazing. And it's all in the moment, isn't it,
yeah.
With children?
Yeah, yeah. Definitely.
So that's something clearly you're going to be doing again.
Yeah.
Will that be an annual event? Or?
I hope so, yeah. So in April, mid-April, we did it so that it was in the half term, which worked really well. Yeah, I just think it would be good to carry it on.
Yeah. And so what's your biggest challenge for this year's Vent the Fringe?
Our biggest challenge is... It's a good question, is... The amount that's going on, getting enough volunteers and getting enough people to help. The only people that run the festival all year round is myself and Jack Whitewood. And basically, it can become quite an issue with staffing when you're looking after about 300 to 400 individuals altogether.
Yeah.
And a lot of people look after themselves, obviously, they're fine. But when there's lots of things happening at once, it can be quite, there's a lot of pressure.
Yes. Yeah. So how do you deal with that stress? Because you always come across as somebody very serene and calm.
I just love it. That's why. I love the adrenaline. I live for that feeling. And I love things going on all the time. I become quite bored quite quickly. So that's when I'm in my element, when I have to deal with 30 things happening at once, literally 30 events happening at once, and trying to be at them, making sure that no one's, you know, that the lights work or that someone's got there or someone's not, you know, having an issue. So, yeah.
Wow, that's quite a skill, isn't it? I'm sitting here very much in awe right now. And is Jack, are you and Jack, I think you complement each other. Your personalities seem quite different, and I imagine you've got very different strengths.
Yeah, definitely. You have to have that within a team. I think it's really important to have a team when you work on something like a festival. So even though I said there's only two of us, when the festival's on, there's a lot of people that kind of come out to help.
And they come back regularly, don't
they? Yeah, they come back a lot. And we have like a core volunteer base. Some of them are local, some of them not local. But we call them this kind of fringe family. And I know that sounds really cheesy, but it's a feeling that's just created. Everyone just loves it. And so I'm really grateful to those people that do that, because it wouldn't happen without
them.
And
are they all volunteers?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's amazing, because through the 9 years that the Vent Fringe has been running, those people have gone on to sort of do really well, haven't they, in their chosen careers, journalists and reviewers, etc. And they come back here, obviously, for the feeling and for the Fringe itself and what that generates?
Well, they definitely get something out of it as well. I've had people that come and work, you know, who just come to as a very young people that come to do a bit of experience, and then that experience has led them to getting a job as a, you know, lighting technician, or getting a job as in events, or, you know, one of my friends who just volunteered with us now runs her own moving venue in a van, which is like this amazing, quirky, you know, travelling venue called the Errant Stage, and I just couldn't be more proud of her. I just think, you know, that's the sort of thing that we love, is when something creates something else. Yeah. It's like this little, the ball keeps rolling.
Yes. Yeah. And will the Errant Stage be coming to this year's Fringe?
I hope so, yes.
Wouldn't that be great?
I'm just trying to sort it out at the moment, so yeah, I'd love to have it as a venue. Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much. More from Vary McCauley, co-director of the Ventnor Exchange, after this short break.
Vectis Radio, FM 104.6. For the people, by the people. Island Harbour presents The Breeze Restaurant and Bar. We offer a variety of delicious foods which can be enjoyed inside the recently refurbished restaurant or outside, overlooking the picturesque marina. Start your day well with something from our breakfast menu. Enjoy afternoon tea with a slice of freshly made cake, or drop by for an evening meal with the family. We offer a range of tasty British classics with a choice of daily specials. Our produce is locally sourced to ensure quality and taste. The Breeze Restaurant and Bar, one of the Solent's best kept secrets. Call us today on 533-388.
Livewire Electric Shop, for all your domestic appliance needs. Appliance sales, repairs, spare parts and TVs. There are 5 and 7 year warranties available on selected brands. Find us in Orchard Street, Newport, or call us on 01983 522 420. Livewire, your one-stop appliance shop.
Red Squirrel Property Shop are an independent, family-run local business that's honest, trustworthy and reliable. Isn't that exactly what you need when renting out your home? Honesty. At Red Squirrel Property Shop, we help rent out and manage properties all over the island. We can offer you various services from guaranteed rent on time, fully managed and tenant introduction. We are there to help take away the stress from renting out your home. Call us today to have the life of a stress-free landlord on 01983 521 212.
We are your Vectis Radio, FM 104.6.
Hello and welcome back to Wisdom and Pratfalls with me, Joan Ellis, and Vara McCauley, co-director of Ventnor Exchange.
Hi.
Hello. Before that break, we were talking about the Ventnor Fringe, which is happening here in Ventnor the 7th to the 12th of August. And in that time frame, Ventnor is the place to be, isn't it? It's a very special, very special place.
Yeah, I'd say.
It's a glorious, glorious place, a wonderful atmosphere, like you say. It's like this Fringe family. And I think everybody that comes as an audience member or as an artist or an organiser, we all get that feel. And I think everybody who lives here gets that wonderful feel from the place. So if there's people listening that think, I'd love to volunteer, I'd love to get involved in that and perhaps learn some new skills or just even, you know, boost their confidence, where can they get in touch, Vara?
Yeah, that's great. Basically, through our website, there is a page for volunteers and there's a little application form and people can go on there. So it's www.vfringe.co.uk. Just go to the menu at the side and then volunteer. And then I get all the volunteer forms.
So. Fantastic. So presumably you can't have too many pairs of hands on that.
I need as many people as I could get. But wonderful. You need to be over 18, that's what I have to say.
Okay, yeah. And enthusiastic and have a good sense of humour, I should think.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
But not necessarily able to do 30 things at once like you.
No, you don't have to. You can do, like, one thing. The main thing with volunteering is looking after the shows. So it's taking tickets for events, being, you know, on the doors of the shows. And you get to watch them as well, so it's great.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, you can stay and watch new things, which could be, you know, mad happenings. You never know.
And isn't there a dog that's a volunteer?
Yeah, Sid the dog.
Sid the dog.
Yeah, we love Sid the dog.
Yeah. And I've seen him go down the carnival in a tutu. What did he wear last year?
He's always in the carnival. What was he this year? I feel like he was a bee, but I'm not sure. He's always around in the exchange if you want to come meet Sid.
He's a bit of a star, isn't he? You can't come and not meet Sid. So I know this, you've had some news recently that you're really pleased about. After 9 years, the Ventnor Exchange has become a community interest company. What does that mean?
We are just so excited about that. It basically means that it's now become a proper non-profit organisation. It's charitable, but it's not a charity, it's like a charity. So many of our organisations on the islands are CICs, community interest companies. It means that all of the artistic stuff that we do is more formalised. So now we have a board of directors, and we kind of have more people as part of the fold, and it means that the organisation lives beyond us, so we can, you know, carry on. That's basically what it means.
That's wonderful. And all, so how did that actually come about? How did you get that?
A lot of research, really. It's something that you have to look into a lot to choose the way that your organisation should go. We are two things. We're a community interest company and we have a trading company. So it can become quite confusing for people, but a lot of places work like this. So like the Key Arts have the similar, they have a trading arm to their charity. So it means that you have everything that's trading is kind of your bar. So we have a bar and we sell records. But everything to do with art is the non-profit base. So everything that you do, you put money back into it and then it makes it sustainable.
Yeah, so it's a successful business model.
Yeah, and it's all about progression, it's about sustainability, and looking to the future. So you invest back into what you do, and that's the best model to use for the arts, I feel. Yeah.
And I think to have people like you and Jack Whitewood as directors of the Ventnor Exchange currently, you clearly have a passion for your work and for bringing talent on, whether that be actually artistic talent or more technical talent. And having you guys at the helm, you're the people that create this character for this festival, aren't you? I mean, you've grown it from its infancy.
Yeah, we've grown it, but we've also grown with it. So we were literally kids when we started it. We were 18. And we've changed a lot.
How do you think
you've
changed, Vary?
Well, when you're 18, you don't know anything of the world, you know. But we were just doing it for fun. We're kind of strange teenagers to be like.
I think we need that quote to go to every sixth form college in England. You know nothing at 18.
Yeah. You do it because you think it would be a good idea, and then the weight of it kind of gets more gradual and gradual and gradual. But you've got to open your arms to it, so you can't just. You also can't grow too quickly. A lot of people do that. So you'll find a lot of festivals will be like tiny 1 year and then someone picks up on it and they get a big sponsor and then they'll grow and then they'll cripple themselves because basically they'll make the jump too big and then they can't sustain it for the years and years. We've done it a bit too far the other way, so we've done a very gradual development. But I don't think we'd have it any other way because we just do it the way we want to do it.
And it seems to me now that Ventnor Fringe is on the map for performers. It's a go-to destination.
I hope so. I hope it will carry on to become more of that. I would love to get some more performers to come from Edinburgh Fringe because we're on the same time, so it can be a real issue for performers.
Are you wedded to your time slot?
It's something that we're thinking about, but we're not sure. We run at the same time as the carnival, which is obviously beneficial for us, for Ventnor Carnival. But also I do need to have more artists. And it is the festival is about the audience, but it's also about the performers. It's somewhere for them to develop their ideas and to test their work out. And if they have to choose between Scotland or the Isle of Wight, you know, they're very different.
Yeah.
Different locations.
I suppose where the Edinburgh Fringe is on for, you know, weeks and
yes.
You're on for days.
Yeah,
it's possible
of course.
To do
they
both,
can, I've had people do both, but it's people will just choose one or the other,
yes.
Basically.
Yeah.
Although ours is probably a bit more viable. It can be very expensive to go to Edinburgh.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. Best of luck with this year's Fringe, and
thank you.
Yeah, do come because it's like I said earlier, it's the most wonderful experience. Just to breathe the air, I think during those few days is extra special, and be out on the the observatory, which is basically a glorified bar in the middle the event bay, isn't it? It's wonderful. It's all lit up and lots of dancing. No, it's fantastic. What else quickly, Vara, is happening at the Exchange prior to the Fringe?
So basically the Ventnor Exchange is a theatre, bar, record shop and everything all merged into one. And so we have a year-round programme of events, and we're trying to keep it as full as possible. So we've got a couple of events coming up before Fringe. We've got a comedian actually in a couple of days, on the 17th of May, called Gráinne Maguire. She's amazing. She's an Irish lady. She's a sort of feminist comedy, very good. And got another show in June, Tunde Jegede, who's an African cellist, North African descent. And he is coming possibly to the Fringe as well. And then we just go into Fringe, but we also have a season of work all year round, so do look out for it on the website.
Brilliant. So just remind us quickly of the website one more time.
Just ventnorexchange.co.uk.
Fantastic. Well, it's been lovely talking to you, Vara McCauley. And like I say, best of luck with this year's Vent the Fringe, 7th to the 12th of August.
Thank you so much, Joan.
And thank you very much for listening. Join me again next week when I'll be talking to a very special lady who has been looking after the big cats at the zoo. And if you don't know who she is, she's Charlotte Corney. So she's a lovely lady. Listen to her next week. Thank you.